Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Cypress is still with us. BlackBerry is back? Question mark. And peeps aren't just for Easter anymore, you know. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Thursday, the 28th of March. Glad you could be with us. And let's take a moment, if we might, just as we get going today, for a small dose of cognitive dissonance. Once again, on this Thursday, records were set in American equity markets. The S&P, to be precise, beat its 2007 closing high today. Keep that in the back of your mind then, if you would, as we turn once again to Europe. Cyprus, of course. Today was the first day on the job for Cypriot bankers in almost 2 weeks. Probably wasn't a whole lot of fun telling people they can only withdraw 300 euros a day. That's about $380 American. Can't spend more than 5,000 euros a month on your credit card. You can pretty much forget about taking substantial sums off that island. Capital controls is what that's called, and their effects can be widespread. Marketplace's Mark Garrison gets us going today by going out for lunch in Astoria, Queens.
Astoria is known best as a Greek neighborhood, but there's a Cypriot presence as well. Xenon Taverna is the rare place that serves authentic Cypriot cuisine with homeland scenes painted on the walls.
Even the Greek dishes we have are with a Cypriot-like twist.
Elena Papagiorgio's parents opened the restaurant after immigrating from Cyprus. American-born, she can't imagine banks here keeping people from their money.
No matter what, it will never happen here.
But she agreed to play along. Her restaurant doesn't take credit cards, so if her customers couldn't get cash, she'd try to sell the food she had, but she'd pull back on restocking the kitchen.
I would probably discontinue ordering certain things and really keep it to a minimum.
We spoke in spurts as she kept her lunch customers in view. She stopped the interview several times to take phone orders, greet diners, and serve dishes, a raven-haired blur whirling around the dining room.
And then this is the grilled octopus with the fish mezze.
She serves Florence Dempsey, a customer for 20 years, who is especially fond of that octopus. She brought a quartet of friends to enjoy wave after wave of small plates. She knew to bring cash and hates to imagine what it would be like with limits on how much she could get.
I think it would be really difficult, very difficult.
The struggles of Cyprus are topic A at the restaurant, just as it's the lead story in the Greek language papers that arrive daily. Papagiorgio hears often about the situation there from relatives and diners.
Every Cypriot customer that walks in, you're going to have like a 5-minute conversation about it, minimum.
The darkest thoughts come from older Cypriots with vivid memories of the country's armed conflict. Some worries seem far-fetched, but just weeks ago, many things that are now reality did too. In Queens, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Behind maybe-only restaurants, retail is one of the most cutthroat competitive industries we've got. You throw in the prospect of traditional brick-and-mortar stores trying to compete with our online colleagues, Amazon.com in particular, and I'll tell you, it gets a little bit nutty. Case in point, today Walmart confirmed it's considering paying in-store patrons to deliver packages to its online customers. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer has that story.
So you're at Walmart, getting ready to pay. The cashier says, wait, you can get a few bucks off if you deliver some stuff your neighbor ordered. Walmart is definitely thinking outside the big box on this one. Ken Perkins is president of Retail Metrics. He says Walmart's customer couriers could be faster than Amazon, which Walmart sees as enemy number one for good reason.
The whole retail industry is shifting toward mobile and toward online purchases and probably felt like they've gotten a bit of a late start to it.
So they have to get creative. Walmart and other big box stores have also experimented with matching Amazon's prices. Other retailers are offering free apps that tell them when you're in their store. They can track your progress through the aisles and text you with special offers. Marshall Cohen is chief retail analyst at the NPD Group.
Let's say you're in a grocery store and you're in the ice cream aisle. They can tell you that, you know, Haagen-Dazs ice cream is on sale today.
Other retailers are closing brick-and-mortar stores and customizing the ones they keep. Alden Lurie is retail strategist at Kurt Salmon. He says, for example, a Target in a city might not stock bargain sizes.
You might not find the 12-pack of Bounty. You might find the 6-pack of Bounty. It might be hard to get on the subway with a 12-pack of Bounty.
Lurie says if retailers can get to know their customers that well and tailor themselves to what savvy shoppers want, they might just have a chance against Amazon. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Boy, it's a little bit like the little engine that could on Wall Street lately. Can't stop, can't slow down. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. If you've been listening to the series that Amy Scott's been doing the past 6 months or so about Oilers School out in Cincinnati, you've heard one name and one voice a lot. Craig Hockenberry is the principal at Oiler. He's the guy who's been leading the charge, trying to turn around a low-performing school in a high-poverty neighborhood. That's a big enough job in any economy, but in this one? Well, it turns out Principal Hockenberry may not have much longer to fight the good fight. Here's Amy.
Craig Hockenberry is in his office interviewing a potential science teacher for next year when a letter arrives.
Dear Ms. Hockenberry, thanks for your service. This is to inform you that your administrative contract expires and your services will no longer be needed, effective July 31st, 2013.
He knew it was coming. Cincinnati Public Schools is looking at least a $46 million hole in its budget next year. So the district is laying off every administrator whose contract expires this summer. That's more than 70 people.
We're moving forward as if we're all coming back,
right,
all right?
That's so, pretty much what the facts do, yeah.
But you never know. It still is a little scary. So.
Yeah.
Getting a pink slip when you're trying to hire someone could be a little awkward, but he goes right back to the sales pitch.
But regardless, whatever happens, one dead monkey don't stop the circus down here at Oiler, and it's a good school. I'm telling you the truth.
This happened once before in Hockenberry's career. He was brought back the next day, and it is likely most of the principals will keep their jobs this time, but possibly with less pay.
We're kind of heartsick about it, actually.
Cincinnati Public Schools spokesperson Janet Walsh says the district may not know exactly how much state funding it will get until July. So officials didn't want to get locked into a new contract with principals until that's sorted out.
We have been in a budget crisis, really, for several years. So we need to preserve all of the options to close that really huge gap.
To a lot of people, Hockenberry is Oiler. He's been there almost 15 years, and he's led its transformation from a failing elementary school in a rundown building to what's known as a community learning center. There's now a preschool and a high school and neighborhood services like healthcare and counseling, even an eye clinic. Slowly, he and his staff have pulled Oiler up from the bottom of the state's ranking system.
We're here because we want to work with Craig, and we believe in his mission and the way he wants to run the school.
Beth Dorfman teaches special ed at Oiler. She says now teachers are wondering if they should stick around next year.
You just question what the place would be like if he wasn't here.
And someday, Hockenberry will leave. It's a lot of job for one guy. School during the day, meetings and fundraisers at night. He's about to put his house on the market because so many people know where he lives. They started showing up at his front door. And he has ambitions to become superintendent one day. But now he's got work to do.
All right. Yeah, we'll meet you out in Peggy Lane.
As school lets out, Hockenberry slips on a white windbreaker with the word principal spelled out in big black letters and heads out into the neighborhood.
Copy that. Can you hear me now, officer?
There's been a lot of fighting on Hatmaker Street right in front of the school. Bullets were flying over the weekend. So after school, Hockenberry and his staff fan out to block the street and keep kids from walking into trouble.
And I just won't block it as long this time, but anybody doesn't listen to our treaty line here, they go home.
Before long, a group of students starts heading his way.
Let them know when they get to me, they're going home for 3 days.
Whatever happens, Hockenberry says Euler will carry on without him.
It will run well if they find somebody that has the passion and the sense of urgency, too. Everything to me is very urgent at Euler. And if that day comes, it may never come. I may spend the rest of my career at Euler, and I would not be unhappy.
But just in case, he's been sending his resume around. In Cincinnati, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
You can catch up with the rest of Amy's series and all of our education coverage at marketplace.org. Gentlemen, let me ask you this. How often do you stop to consider your morning shave? The blade, the razor, the shaving cream? Probably not so often, right? It's a chore, a thing you gotta do to be presentable. Unless you work at radio, in which case nobody notices, but that's a whole different deal. Anyway, today on Conversations from the Corner Office, the gender-neutral business of shaving. Whether it's your face or your legs, everybody needs a razor and a blade. And if Jeff Rader has his way, you're gonna buy them from him. Online. Jeff helped start Warby Parker, selling eyeglasses on the web. Shaving is his new thing on a website called Harry's. Jeff, it's good to have you with us.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Why shaving? I mean, what was it about this thing we all have to do that made you say,
You know, it started when my co-founder and one of my close friends for a long time, his name's Andy Katz Mayfield, walked out of a drugstore and had waited for 10 minutes for them to unlock the case where the razors were being held. And he had a receipt for more than $20 for four razor blades and some shaving cream. And he just called me and he's like, I wonder if you could launch a direct-to-consumer brand in grooming and shaving in particular and really appeal to sort of more sophisticated, discerning guys at a price that was accessible to lots of people.
Talk to me for a second about product design because, and this is, I mean, this sounds a little silly, right? But the razor is an amazingly personal thing, right? You pick it up every day. You got to deal with it. It has to be ergonomically right. You scrape off a layer of your skin with it.
Yep. We spent a lot of time thinking about ergonomics and the handle in particular. I think what we want to do is make it easily – it's got to be a performance product that performs for people every morning. And so we want to make it a product that is easily controlled and that delivers a great experience, but also a product that you're proud to use every day, that when you pick it up and hold it, it feels great and you think it's a – and know it's a shaving tool that's going to work well for you. On the blades.
Yeah, talk about the blades, right? Because if I'm walking out of the shower every morning all hacked up, you know, I don't care how nice the handle is.
Of course. When we started Harry's, went on a journey to try to figure out how razor blades were made, who makes the best product. And that journey took us to Germany, where we ended up working with a 90-year-old company who makes incredibly high-quality razor blades and partnered with them to make our product.
So you're telling me that the track twos I get down at the local CVS aren't cutting it?
Hey, if you like the track twos, then...
I didn't say I liked them, man. I said that's what I got on my shelf in my bedroom.
Well, we'd love to have you try some Harry's product and see if we can help you upgrade the experience.
Obviously, with Warby Parker, you guys have cracked the get into an established business but do it online for cheaper and give consumers choice.
clearly you're confident you can do the same thing here, but I mean, the shaving industry is a behemoth, especially when everybody can walk down to the drugstore and get a can of Barbasol and a Track 2, you know?
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think, first, lots of the dynamics that we saw at Warby Parker exist here. It's a big market. It's dominated by a couple of companies. They make huge profits, and they charge lots and lots of money for products that are difficult to make, but products that you could make for much less than they charge.
Are you just a serial entrepreneur now? I mean, is that where you have found yourself?
You know, it has been an incredibly fun and rewarding experience launching both Harry's and Warby Parker. Personally, I'm really committed to trying to grow Harry's and to continue to be involved in growing Warby Parker. They take a lot of work and it's a lot of fun, and I think that's where I'm focused right now.
Jeff Rader of Warby Parker fame, I guess you could say. His new company is called Harry's. It does shaving stuff. Jeff, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Coming up in just a minute, Merry Christmas.
What we've seen is movement in like bicycles. Also, just sometimes they'll just buy regular toys and kind of wrap it up and give it.
Wait a minute. She's talking about Easter? But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials picked up a third of 1% today, 52 points, closed at 14,578. That's an all-time high. The S&P 500 grew 0.4%, 6 points, ended things at 1569. That, too, is an all-time high. The NASDAQ, not quite so all-time today. Still, though, up a third of 1%, 11 points, 3267 at the bell. For the week, markets are closed tomorrow for Good Friday, by the by. The Dow rose 0.4%. The S&P 500 ended 0.8% ahead. The NASDAQ gained 0.6%. You know what? We don't call this the numbers for nothing. For the quarter, because, yes, this is also its last trading day, the Dow is up 11.2%, the big board's best start to the year since 1998. The S&P jumped 10%. The NASDAQ weighed in 8.2%. Fatter. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 1.85%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up tomorrow. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on how much we earned and how much left our wallets last month. It releases its personal income and spending report. U.S. markets are closed for Good Friday, but that's not going to stop us from celebrating the anniversary of the first time the Dow Jones topped the 10,000 mark. It happened on March 29, 1999. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. All right, now here's a news item I don't think anybody would have seen coming a year ago. BlackBerry reported quarterly profits this morning, and first of all, they made a profit. Not a lot, $98 million, but a profit nonetheless. And the company, formerly known as Research in Motion, says its new Z10 handset is selling pretty well, a million of them so far. Roberto Baldwin writes for Wired Magazine. Roberto, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
What do you think? Can we take from this number today that BlackBerry is back, perhaps?
Marginally back. I think they're it's the first step to a comeback for a company that for the last 5 years has been struggling.
Struggling is being kind of kind, don't you think?
Well, yeah. they sat on their laurels post-iPhone. Android caught up, and BlackBerry just kind of sat around and didn't do anything. And finally, with a new management team, a new CEO, they finally have put out a brand new platform and new devices.
Talk to me for a second, though, about the BlackBerry ecosystem, right? I mean, iPhone and Apple has its huge thing, and Android is developing its thing. Where is BlackBerry in that slice of the market?
They're super aggressive with their applications. They have 100,000 apps, but I mean, numbers don't mean anything if you don't have the quality apps that people want. They have some good apps from from EA. They have, you know, they have Twitter and Facebook integration, which, you know, that you have to have that. You just can't ignore those. But that doesn't mean they're anywhere close to what iOS or what Android have right now.
Is the Z10 going to be enough to do it, though? I mean, they've got structural problems, too, that they need to fix.
I think the Z10 is a good first step into getting the sort of the personal use market. You know, the Q10 is going to be the one that the hardcore enterprise users are going to go after, something with a physical keyboard. If they keep iterating and updating their platform and updating their devices as quickly as Apple or as Google has, then they should be okay. I can see in a year or two where they'll actually be a force to be reckoned with.
You know, talk to me for a second about that physical keyboard. Everybody I know who's gone from BlackBerry to iPhone or to an Android touchscreen phone has complained for like 6 weeks, but then they get over it. I mean, how long is BlackBerry going to be able to hold on to those people who want that physical keyboard?
I think there's some people who just will never switch over. I mean, using Android, using iPhone, sometimes it's nice to have that physical keyboard. I wouldn't give up a giant rectangle for it, but some people really want that keyboard.
What's your go-to smartphone, man?
It's still the iPhone. There. Actually, the iPhone 4S. I haven't even gotten a 5.
Oh, slacker. Come on. and it's actually not a bad segue into this question, which is, you know, 15 years ago, everybody was writing Apple off as dead, too.
Oh, yeah. Apple was doomed. They were 90 days from bankruptcy. And, you know, Steve Jobs came back. He was able to slash a bunch of products, you know, kind of weed out a lot of people at Apple who just weren't pulling their weight, and start introducing some really great products that kickstarted a market. I mean, the iMac, the iPod, and then eventually the iPhone.
Yeah, you think we're going there with BlackBerry or no?
You know, there's the potential for them to come back and be big. But with just one product, I don't see them, you know, taking on Apple anytime soon.
Roberto Baldwin writes for Wired. Roberto, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Easter is upon us this weekend, but you didn't need me or a calendar to tell you that. All you had to do is notice the proliferation of peeps out there. But you know what? Those peeps aren't just for Easter anymore, gang, as I said up at the top. The maker of the ubiquitous marshmallow chicks is making a play at other holidays, expanding the times during the year that you can eat sugar covered in sugar. Marketplace's Adrian Hill has that story.
Peeps are among the more divisive candies. Steve Almond is the author of the book Candy Freak.
They're basically a urine-colored marshmallow made to look like a small chick.
He doesn't like peeps.
They're a candy that is somewhere between candy and gag item. I don't mean that you gag on them, although that might also be true. I mean that they are, like, I don't know a lot of people who are like, ooh, I just really am hungry for an artificially colored marshmallow product.
But he gets why they're invading the candy aisles on other holidays, like Valentine's, Halloween, and Christmas. They're even introducing summer peeps this year.
If you've got a sort of brand identity and a niche in the market, which for peeps is somewhere between an actual candy and like a toy, then you just expand your reach to the other holidays.
And those new peeps, everything from strawberry-flavored chicks dipped in chocolate to sugar cookie-flavored Christmas peeps, those peeps are selling. Maybe not to Steve Almond, but to the rest of us. Ellie Deardorff is with Just Born, the candy company that makes peeps.
If you combined all of the holidays, you know, Halloween, Christmas, Valentine's Day, and Easter, we are over 2 billion peeps being produced for the year.
1 billion for Easter, another billion for the rest of the year. Just Born is a private company, so we don't know the details, but Deardorff says 2012 was the company's best year ever. So why not make the pastel-colored, sugar-coated baby marshmallow animals a year-round choice? Nicoletta Panteva is an analyst for Ibis World.
A lot of it has to do with consumer anticipation of the product.
Always around peeps would be less fun to eat and to make fun of. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
2 billion, man. All right, moving on. There are, and I can't quite believe I'm saying this, but there are only 2 shopping days left until Easter. Now, I know, outside of a chocolate bunny or maybe a package of the aforementioned peeps, this hasn't traditionally been a big gift-giving season. But far be it for tradition to stand in the way of good old free enterprise, huh? There are companies out there that would love to see you stock those Easter baskets with something other than candy and colored eggs. Marketplace's David Weinberg has that story.
This Sunday, millions of kids will dig through thick knots of unnaturally green fake grass. They're hunting for plastic eggs, peeps, and small toys. I'm talking, of course, about the Easter basket.
The ultimate basket is 78% candy.
The more eggs.
This is a clip from a Walgreens commercial. In it, a kid draws a pie chart that explains the platonic ideal of what should be in an Easter basket. Taking up a 10% slice of that pie is a category called the wow factor. This is code for toy.
I never got any toys for Easter.
Sean McGowan grew up in a world where you were lucky to get jelly beans and a chocolate rabbit in your basket. Maybe that's why he grew up to be a toy industry analyst. McGowan says that nowadays, it's common to give toys at Easter.
I think it just sort of slowly evolved and began to gain momentum at the prompting of the toy companies. Of course, they want another gift-giving occasion.
McGowan says that most of the toys that end up in Easter baskets are inexpensive, the spring equivalent of a stocking stuffer.
You know, small wind-up toys, perhaps, or, you know, miniature dolls, or, you know, maybe something $20 or less, or even $10 or less.
I took a trip to Target in downtown Los Angeles, where I met store manager Simone Tatro.
This has been a favorite of all of the guests this year, and it's called A Baby with a Baby. And of course, with spring being the rebirth of everything, you know, and I mean, it's a really cute plush toy. Mm-hmm. Let's keep walking.
Tatro says that parents aren't just buying low-priced toys for Easter. She's surprised at how many big-ticket items are being given as Easter gifts this year.
Yes. What we've seen is movement in, like, bicycles for some reason, like an Easter bike. Also, just sometimes they'll just buy regular toys that have really nothing to do with Easter and kind of wrap it up and give it kind of like a second Christmas almost. It's one of our big toy holidays, probably the second biggest of the year.
Outside of the Target, I quizzed some people on the street about what kind of gifts they would be giving this Easter. Most people looked at me like I was crazy, including Sarah Kim.
Easter gifts? The gift of Jesus Christ? I don't know what other gift I would give.
Do you not tend to give gifts at Easter?
No, I think it's superfluous. I think it's a way to make money. I think Easter should be about the true reason, not about superficiality.
Yeah. Did you get Easter gifts as a kid?
Probably not. Maybe that's why I'm bitter.
I talked to Holly, a woman who was pushing her son Mark in a stroller. Mark was definitely expecting toys this Easter.
A Ghostbuster stuff and a Ghostmobile.
Holly has made it a tradition to put a few toys in Mark's Easter basket. She says this year, he'll be getting Legos. I'm David Weinberg from Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note on the way out today, which, if you can place this music, you know will end with the sad demise of an amazing car. A couple of guys, by which I mean idiots, over in Germany took a Mercedes-Benz 300 SL for a test drive the other day. That's the classic mid-1950s version with the gullwing doors. Best car ever, if you ask me. The guys were mechanics, just finished restoring the thing, rolled it off the side of the road. Damage alone came to $830,000. The police report says the 80 kilometer per hour speed limit, 55 miles an hour or so, was not observed. Gee, you think? Anyone? Bueller? Bueller? Anyone? All right, we're done. That's Marketplace from APM. Today, the Dow picked up a third of 1%. We'll call that 52 points. The NASDAQ up 0.4%, 6 points. The S&P 500 up a third of 1%, 11 points. John Buckley, Stephen Gregory, John Haas, George Judson, Jonathan Karp, Ethan Lindsay, Betsy Streisand, and Celeste Wesson are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is Sarah Gilbert. My name's Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you tomorrow. And this is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.